Kathy Yale. Thank you for the introduction, Carl. $25,000 a year for a graduate stipend? Is that retroactive?
Where was it this now? Shame.
My luck. Comets are small bodies composed of rocky and icy materials whose orbits traverse both the inner part of the solar system and its far outer reaches. Some estimates suggest there might be as much mass in the comets as there is in the planets, yet until recently we haven't known very much about their origin, about their composition. The Stardust mission was designed, well, in an attempt to rectify that situation, the Stardust mission was designed to capture some of the solid particles in a comet's tail using low-density silica called aerogel, here shown with its inventor, Peter Tsu. Capturing these particles is not an easy task, as the expected encounter velocity between a spacecraft and a comet is many kilometers per second, sufficient to vaporize the particle, if not part of the capture medium itself. The solution is to use a capture medium of such low density that the particle slows down very gradually as it penetrates the capture medium, thus reducing the heating rate compared to the particle's cooling rate. Aerogel is the least dense substance known, being composed of strands of pure silica having an aggregate density of about 0.003 grams per cubic centimeter. And as you can see here, blocks of aerogel can be constructed with such low density that you can see through them, yet they still have mechanical strength. Here you see a pallet consisting of blocks of aerogel mounted in an aluminum frame being loaded into the Stardust spacecraft. The Stardust spacecraft was launched in February of 1999, made a close pass to the Earth about 2 years later. This gave it a gravitational boost, such that it made another close pass with the Earth in July of 2003. And that put it on a course to intercept the orbit of comet Vilde 2 in January and February 2004, and to return to Earth on January the 15th of 2006. Now, Stardust got within 234 kilometers of the comet in January and February of 2004, and the encounter velocity was about 6 kilometers per second. So comet Vilde 2 is a Jupiter family comet believed to come from the Kuiper belt beyond the orbit of Neptune, and you can see from this composite of images from the Stardust spacecraft that it has the nucleus has a diameter of only 4.5 kilometers. It's pockmarked with meteorite impact craters. The bright streamers that you see are dust particles being carried outward by water vapor formed by the evaporation of ice due to solar heating. The same phenomenon responsible for the beautiful cometary tails like those you saw in the first slide. So as the spacecraft neared the comet, the capsule opened, the pallet of aerogel was rotated into position so that it could intercept the particles from the comet, and then after the encounter phase was finished, the pallet was rotated back into the capsule, which was closed in preparation for return to Earth. And this is the Stardust spacecraft returning to Earth over the Utah sky in the early morning hours of January 15th, 2006, and this is the way the capsule was found on the ground within an hour of touchdown. The capsule was returned to the curatorial facility of the NASA Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, within 40 hours of touchdown. It was immediately opened and you didn't have to do anything else but look at it to see that the mission was a success, because you could see impact craters large enough to be seen with the naked eye, meaning that big particles had been captured. And this is a close-up view of one of the blocks of aerogel returned by the spacecraft in its frame. And here you see the track made by the cometary particle as it passed through the aerogel. Now, most of what you see is damage to the aerogel. The particle that made all that mess is a tiny, tiny speck at the end of the track. So a very talented crew at the Johnson Space Center have developed these diamond microtome techniques with which you just slice out the entire track from the block of aerogel, hoping to get the particle within the volume. And here's what it looks like when you take it out. Here's one of your slices. There's the particle track. And here are a couple of particles here. Maybe one there. Maybe a couple along the way. Here's a close-up view of one of the tracks from the Stardust aerogel. Particle entered from the right as you look at it. This puffiness near the point of entry is due to the particle being composed of a lot of smaller grains, each of which decided to go off in its own direction. But the largest ones tend to get the farthest to the left. These are blow-up views of the track. So this guy here is this one. This one here is this guy here must be this one. And
what's the scale? You haven't said.
Okay, so these tracks are from a millimeter to a centimeter in length. Okay? So very tiny particles. This guy here is so before you get the idea that I'm telling you about only my work, here is a list of the mineralogy petrology subgroup of the preliminary examination team. These are the people fortunate enough to get the first crack at looking at describing the returned particles. A cozy group of 200 of us. So most of the particles returned by Stardust were olivine and pyroxene, here surrounded by partially melted aerogel. Now, here I'm plotting you have to understand that the particles are very, very thin slices of the particles are made. They're mounted on grids for crystal structure determination and for chemical analysis by a whole array of microbeam techniques operated by that huge list of 200 people in various laboratories all over the world. So here all I've done is plot the histogram of the chemical composition of the olivine from the Vild 2 comet. And you can see that a large proportion of the olivine from the comet is very forsterite rich. That's a composition that's actually pretty unusual for an array of terrestrial rocks. But as you can see from the other histograms that I've plotted here, this is actually a pretty common, a pretty normal feature of primitive meteorites, such as the Orgay, CI carbonaceous chondrite, the Murchison CM carbonaceous chondrite. Australian meteorite, right? And Asper 094. Now, unfortunately, what are plotted here for the primitive meteorites are the compositions only of fine-grained olivine in these meteorites. If, in addition, one were to plot the compositions of coarse-grained olivine in these meteorites, the forsterite-rich peaks would be even higher, much higher, compared to all the other compositions, including for the Allende meteorite, which is also a very primitive meteorite. So, bottom line is, the olivine that comes back from the comet looks very much like the olivine in primitive meteorites. We've seen this stuff before. Now, one particle in particular called Inti, after some, we have people from the humanities here, some man god or something, Inti. this particle in particular was very interesting to us, to our research group. Let me show it to you. So this is a close-up view, and the mineral identifications made in this particle, so this is a 500 nanometer scale bar, the mineral each mineral identification here is made by a combination of both crystal structure by electron diffraction and chemical composition by energy dispersive X-ray analysis. So the particle is composed of aluminum-rich melanite, spinel, titanium aluminum-rich clinopyroxene, here called facetite, and anorthite. And this is what we call a type B1 calcium aluminum-rich refractory inclusion from the Allende carbonaceous chondrite, seen in cross polars. The bluish-gray stuff all around the outside is aluminum-rich melanite. The brightly colored grains, the birefringent grains, are titanium aluminum-rich clinopyroxene, and these black specks in the pyroxene and the melanite are spinel. These are believed to be assemblages of the first minerals to condense from the cooling gas of solar composition at the very highest temperatures, and then those assemblages were melted up in the nebula to form these spherical objects. The point is that the mineralogical composition of Inti is identical to this. These are very characteristic of carbonaceous chondrites, and so Inti is a refractory inclusion from a comet. And here, this is actually very, very difficult to get very precise analyses. These are very thin slices of these tiny samples that are brought back. These are the best analyses we have. I've plotted the chemical composition of the pyroxenes from Inti and compared them with the chemical compositions of clinopyroxene in calcium aluminum-rich inclusion, CAIs, from primitive meteorites. And you can see that the Allende, Inti clinopyroxene analyses, some of them lie right on the same trend as the Allende pyroxenes. And in order to do so, the Inti pyroxenes must contain significant amounts of titanium 3+, as do the Allende ones. Titanium 3+ bearing pyroxenes are only stable at high temperature in a gas of solar composition. Now, in case you don't believe that, here is a slide showing Zane's spectra, X-ray absorption, near-edge structure spectroscopy of Inti pyroxene in the red compared with Zane's spectra for synthetic standards containing titanium 3+, the LATIO3, and titanium 4+, the SRTIO3. And you can see these doublets in the stardust pyroxene imply that there is both titanium 3+ and titanium 4+ in the pyroxene, just like in the Allende pyroxene and the other CAI and the CAIs from all these primitive meteorites. So comets, apparently, at least this one, contains both the highest temperature condensates from the solar gas, the refractory inclusions, and ices, the lowest temperature condensates. One explanation for this apparent incongruity is that the refractory inclusions condensed in the hot inner part of the solar nebula and were transported grain by grain to the outer part of the solar nebula where ices were condensing. I prefer to think that both the refractory inclusions and the ices condensed in the inner part of the solar nebula as it cooled from above 1700K to below 100K. And here I'm plotting ion microprobe determinations of the oxygen isotopic compositions of CAIs from primitive meteorites. On this scale, the sun would plot at -60, -60. And a characteristic feature of the oxygen isotopic compositions of CAIs is that they are equally enriched in oxygen 17 and oxygen 18 relative to the sun. And this is thought to be due to a phenomenon known as isotopic self-shielding of ultraviolet photons from the early sun as they penetrated into the surrounding nebular gas disk. In this process, photons of the wavelengths necessary to dissociate CO16 are attenuated by the very great abundance of that isotopic species, such that only those photons capable of dissociating CO17 and CO18 were able to penetrate deep into the interior of the nebular cloud, where they were able to liberate O17 and O18, the rarer isotopes, from the carbon monoxide and make them available to form the condensates and everything else we have in the inner solar system. But the point about this graph, for the purposes of this talk, is that the INTI refractory inclusion has exactly the same oxygen isotopic compositions as the refractory inclusions in the meteorites. So a remaining problem is the absence of hydrated phyllosilicates from the cometary particles. These are very characteristic of CI and CM chondrites. And in the experiment shown here, hydrated phyllosilicate was fired into the aerogel at 7 kilometers per second. And you can see the very characteristic 7 angstrom D spacings survive capture in the aerogel, meaning that if hydrated phyllosilicates were in the comet as part of the material captured by the Stardust mission, that we would have seen the 7 angstrom D spacings. We would have been able to detect hydrated phyllosilicates. They're not there. This has given rise to the idea that maybe the difference between a carbonaceous chondrite and a comet is that the carbonaceous chondrites were on asteroidal bodies that were warm enough to have liquid water, which was able to react with olivine to form hydrated phyllosilicates, and maybe the comets were always cold, and you had only all the water frozen up as ice, which had very great difficulty forming, reacting with the olivine to form hydrated silicates. Well, in summary, the mineralogical, mineral chemical, and isotopic compositions of the samples from Comet Vilde 2 are very similar to those of the anhydrous fraction of carbonaceous chondrites. Hydrated phyllosilicates are notably absent from comet samples, and Comet Vilde 2 contains refractory inclusions of ice, thus juxtaposing both the highest and lowest temperature solar nebular chondrites. Thanks very much.